cough drop helped you. So despite the beauty of this day, I have to tell you right up front that Mother's Day is any preacher's worst nightmare. It's a Hallmark holiday made for guilt and sticky sweet sentiment, which always seems to miss the point. The real struggle and the real joy and pain of mothering is so much more complicated. Motherhood is beautiful and treacherous. The archetypal mother in our culture is both revered and vilified, and that describes the experience for many of us. Mother is the source of all, and well, that's just a lot to ask. Given the diverse feelings mothers engender among us, it's no wonder that most wise Sunday morning sermonators get out of Dodge on this day. Because you just can't win. You can't ignore it, and you can't possibly speak to everyone's needs and experiences with this primal role. So today I just decided to go with it, you know? Just give it a shot. My perspective has changed over time. For a few years, we even held Universal Parents Day celebrations, hoping to meet more of the experiences of today's diverse families. And that got a little closer to acknowledging the fundamental nurturing that the human animal requires, regardless of gender. But the bottom line is that children need parenting. They need love and food and shelter and so much more. And if the species is to survive, we have to figure out how to do this difficult task together. Another way to go is to explore the social justice issues facing families. That was the original purpose of Mother's Peace Day. The Mother's Peace Day proclamation goes back to 1870 when abolitionist Julia Ward Howe dedicated the celebration to the eradication of war. This is a short excerpt from that proclamation. "Arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be that of water or of tears, say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm." It was a powerful statement that centered the day in peace and justice until President Woodrow Wilson in 1914 declared it a day to honor and revere your mother. But there are still social justice issues that families, and especially mothers, are most affected by. The economic inequalities, the challenges of raising children fall disproportionately upon young parents. The costs of childcare and healthcare are astronomical. When already burdened with student debt, the economics of raising a family is daunting. It's a social justice issue when maternity leave is a detriment to career and to your child alike. The safety net for families is so thin in this country that it glorifies motherhood, but does nothing to ease the burden of mothers or any parent trying to do the best they can. When the pressure of long and unpredictable hours at work make it impossible to be present, who is looking after the children? That is the moment when extended family, grandparents or aunts or uncles or neighbors, may be the very thing that saves a child. There is no guarantee, but at least it's possible. I grew up in what appeared to be a traditional mid-century family where the father went to work at a factory every day and the mother stayed home with four children. Since my parents were both immigrants, they did not have the support of an extended family in raising those four kids. And they came to this country knowing only the form of child-rearing that values obedience over all else. In Germany, where they came from, children were expected to be seen and not heard. They were made to obey their parents and to expect corporal punishment if they did not. A child was a possession and a reflection on their parents more than an individual with thoughts and feelings of their own. their achievements were their parents' achievements. I grew up hearing the phrase, "What would the neighbors say?" a lot. That was the reason enough to stay in line. The tilt of that world was anything but child-centered. And this style of parenting was present in the United States too, but it was starting to come apart at the seams in the 60s and 70s. Questioning authority and a revolution in social mores and expectations could not be kept out of that strict house, and that was a good thing. And in fact, the neighbors did see us, and that was even a better thing. No matter what kind of parent you are, there is something useful about those other adults who see and love your children for who they are. A memory I have from childhood that has always stayed with me is the day my father underwent his first open heart surgery. I was about 13 years old and at home waiting to hear from the hospital. My mother had gone with my father to St. Luke's in New York City for one of the first bypass surgeries done in this country. A neighbor came over to check in on us kids in the meantime. I remember sitting alone on the living room couch, feeling overwhelmed, but not having the words for that. Tanta Laura, as we called her, sat down next to me and asked me how I was. That's all it took to open the dam, and the tears and fears could flow. Her empathetic witness made all the difference to that young girl. I don't think she said much. She was just there. She was there for a usually overlooked middle child in the tornado of family stress. For a moment, she was there and she saw me. She didn't fix anything or offer any advice. All she did was witness a little human being. I think if I had known my grandparents, they might have been the empathetic witnesses to me and my brothers and sisters' narrow and fear-filled world. Maybe they would have softened the hard edges of parents stressed to their limit trying to fit in a strange foreign land. That is actually what my parents did for me. They were so very different with their own grandchildren. As it turns out, they change and grow too. They became more relaxed, more affectionate, more able to enjoy the grandchildren for who they are. What a change from the parents I grew up with. And now, as a grandparent myself for over 3 years, I wonder what has changed for me. There's something about this role that shakes the ground beneath your feet if you let it. We do not get much say in anything about it. Certainly, the wish to be a grandparent will not make it come true. Families all have their own dynamics, and being separated or more distant than you would like is entirely possible. In fact, the single most enduring fact about grandparenting is the need to keep your mouth shut. Knowing when to not speak and to respect the primacy of the parents is critical. But that's the beauty of the role, too. Grandparents are secondary actors, backup at best. We are not fully responsible for the young lives which are so much at the center of a new parent's existence. The 24/7 endurance race of it all is not our problem either. We do not get to make the big decisions and not make the big mistakes too. We just get to be empathetic witnesses for our own children as they parent and for our grandchildren as they grow. Since my grandson Charlie was born, I've been spending my Mondays off with him and now his baby brother Sam. My Mondays are like visiting a different planet. The pace of an infant or toddler's day is so in the moment. There is no time for big picture thinking or worry beyond the next meal or diaper change. For 8.5 hours, it's just me and Sam now. At 4.5 months old, his skills expand week by week. Just this past Monday, he began to grasp toys and really hold on to them intentionally in a way that he had not been able to do before. He was napping when I arrived, so when I went up to get him, and when he woke up, and you know, he's at that stage where you can flip from your back to your stomach, but not from your stomach to your back, so he gets really annoyed because he's flipped over and he can't get up. So I flip him over and get this huge smile, and the hands come up and touch my face. Right? It doesn't get any better than that. The day is full of just those kinds of simple things. He loves music and going outside. They make him happy. They make me happy. A cycle of feeding and playing and napping brings us to 5:20 p.m. and Mom's return just in the nick of time. And then when three-year-old Charlie gets home from daycare, I get another delightful but much more chatty welcome. His world is expanding exponentially, too. He is curious, temperamental, and resilient. Big feelings slay him, and then he bounces right back as if nothing happened at all. The time we spend together is full of wonder for him and for me. A dinner conversation with Charlie wanders from the way broccoli looks like trees to wondering why there are knots in the wood of the kitchen table. And what a wonder it is that knots in the wood planks are from the pieces where branches in a tree grew. Getting to witness up close the growing of young hearts and minds is a wonder, and it is awesome. It's nothing more or less than being an empathetic witness, a supporting player whose primary role is appreciation for what is right in front of us right now. A grandparent or any other adult involved in a child's life has one real job. That is to notice, to wonder, and to appreciate. Be here now is the only job description. And it's the kind of role that can literally save a child. Psychotherapist Alice Miller writes in her book, The Drama of the Gifted Child, that such witness can save a child from becoming a tyrant themselves. In an abusive home, some such empathetic witness that acknowledges the pain of the moment gives back perspective and provides a sense of justice where it is in much too short supply. Both empathetic witness and wonder are essential. Along with food and shelter, a child just needs emotional sustenance to thrive. Author and environmentalist Rachel Carson never had children, but when her niece, who was single, had a baby in 1952, she took both of them under her wing. Sadly, a few years later, her niece suddenly died, and she then adopted her grandnephew, Roger. In the experience of raising him, she claimed the importance of wonder and wrote a book about it called The Sense of Wonder. She says it's not important that children know about nature. What matters is that they delight in nature. But they won't unless they're shown the way. These words we often read in child dedications. A child's world is fresh and new and beautiful, full of wonder and excitement. It's our misfortune that for most of us, that clear-eyed vision, that true instinct for what is beautiful and awe-inspiring, is dimmed and even lost before we reach adulthood. She says, if I had influence with the good fairy who's supposed to preside over the dedication of all children, I would ask that her gift to each child in the world be a sense of wonder so indestructible that it would last throughout life, as an unfailing antidote against the boredom and disenchantment of later years, the sterile preoccupation with things that are artificial, the alienation from the sources of our strength. If a child is to keep alive his inborn sense of wonder without any such gift from the fairies, he needs the companionship of at least one adult who can share it, rediscovering with him the joy, excitement, and mystery of the world we get to live in. That is the gift that we who are non-parents with children in our lives can offer, and to them and to their mothers and fathers to stress themselves, to simply be companions in wonder, to share the joy and excitement of the world as it is. There is so much beauty, so much fascinating detail that as adults we fail to notice and think about. Getting to explain a tiny sliver of this world to a child in wonder is a gift to weary and jaded hearts. The call to just be here now with another human being in simple and profound wonder is pure and available magic. So on this day, I hope that we can slow down enough to pay attention to the questions, the feelings, and the grasp of a child's hand that might be reaching for you. I do not think any of us would be sitting here today unless someone did that kind of caring for us when we were at our most vulnerable. Someone was a witness for you. So let's take the time to remember them. First, we'll sing Spirit of Life, and then you're invited to come forward and light a candle for someone who mothered or fathered or companioned you through your own growing. And take a flower to remind you of the gift of a loving presence in your life. First, we'll sing. You can remain seated.